You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
All right, everybody, it's that time again. Now, from the University of Illinois, based up in Chicago, the top asset protection attorney in the world, Tom Hiller!
Hey, out there, big guy.
Jim, it's very difficult to come back from that introduction.
Yeah, I know. But I got to do it. You know, once every few months, it's just got to roll out there, Big T. How you doing?
I am well. And that reminded me of the days when the Bulls were in their glory and we could count on consistent back-to-back championships. And watching those guys roll out at the beginning of the game was just too much fun. I'm well, thank you.
Oh, man, that was just the best. I play that song, I get goosebumps. My wife can relate to it all these years later. And yes, I was at that game where the guy played 36 holes of golf and then brought him back from like 40 behind at the Miami Arena. Broke my heart, but my God, what magic. So, Tom, tell me, what's going on in the family office world?
Quite a bit, actually. So many of the trends that have been emerging or incubating over the last 4 or 5 years have continued, and a couple of new things are taking place as well. So as a threshold comment, the family office industry is still a fairly nascent industry, though it is developing very quickly and globalizing and beginning to get more and more sophisticated. Probably the a clear trend is that the concept or the family office itself, which is just a business that runs the affairs of a family, and there are potentially 30 plus services it could perform, from accounting and reporting to hosting family websites to doing education, investing, coordinating legal, accounting, risk management, insurance, you know, sort of the whole financial marketplace of taking care of a family down to, you know, concierge things, you know, booking dinners and vacations and scheduling vacation homes and jets and so on and so forth. So most of the family offices out there provide more like 13 or 14 services and don't begin to try to tackle all the things that could be done. But every type of family office has been growing in terms of the size of the offices, meaning the assets under management, and the sheer number of these offices. So the three varieties, and there's some hybrids, but the three varieties are basically a virtual family office, which is an outsourced model, and it might just be the family matriarch and patriarch and one assistant or no assistant, and they can start at a smaller level. And not that there's a one-to-one correlation between asset size and the structure of the office, but typically it's a $25 million to $500 million type of family, although I have seen virtual family offices with over $1 billion in assets and they made a decision to outsource almost everything. The single family offices tend to run from $100 million or $250 million as a bottom line number and get as big as the sky. And the multifamily offices tend to start with at least $500 million. Most of them are well over $1 billion when they start. And all of them have been picking up steam. So new family, single family offices are being created on a regular basis. Virtual family offices are becoming more common, and multifamily offices, of which there were perhaps 50 in the U.S. 15 years ago, now there's closer to 140 in North America, so there's been a real growth in that industry. There are several of these being formed in China, you know, as we speak, as they jump on the bandwagon. And so all types of these family offices have continued to prosper and proliferate, particularly in the Pacific Rim. You know, the Chinese have discovered this concept as a global best-in-class approach to long-term wealth preservation enhancement, and so they are working very hard to get up to speed and beginning to try to emulate what's going on in Europe and the United States.
Now, Tom, what role does your firm play in the family office world? I think it's important to kind of set the table so people know where you're coming from.
Sure. We represent an awful lot of these entities and have set up many of them, all of them, working with the multifamily office, the virtual, and the single family offices. So we are outside legal counsel, and we often say if you could afford us as your in-house team, you'd like to, but that doesn't make sense. And so you get the ability of people who've worked in the space at a senior level and have the ability to benchmark and understand it. And our roles tend to be, you know, business, corporate, real estate, securities type work, tax and estate planning, of course, asset protection and premarital planning. And it's really mostly financial. So think of it all as business, financial, tax, quantitative type work. And it's about getting these offices up and running, making sure they're doing it efficiently, trying to eliminate tax leakage, coordinating and tying in the family businesses with the family holding companies, often run by these family offices or managed by them, all ultimately owned in turn by trusts. And so it's a large financial alphabet soup that's very difficult to put together in an elegant manner, but with a lot of work and effort and time, really pretty significant results can be achieved so that the family has a lower risk profile, more likely to live and fight another day if they get hit with a big lawsuit or a class action or a slip and fall or divorce or whatever is out there attacking their wealth, and eliminate some of the payroll tax and income tax leakage, make sure the benefits of exec comp are appropriate for the family, make sure their business structures make sense, are effective, minimize liabilities, don't pay more taxes than they should. And so it's really a very almost audit checklist-driven type approach so that the families have more disposable income and money, which means they can build their businesses, they can invest, they can give to charities, they can fund their foundations, you know, whatever it is that they are driven to achieve. We try to put the control or keep the control in their hands to accomplish whatever mission they want to carry out. So we're sort of an outside strategic advisor to these families, and we often work with their in-house counsel and local, you know, law firms to help them do this work, and accounting firms and insurance, you know, advisors and others. It really takes a fairly large team to get this done right.
Now, what type of evolution are you seeing? You know, we're seeing here, and there's the new tax law. We really don't know what that's going to look like, so we really don't want to talk about that. But I do want to talk about is the change in the evolution. You read about how there's the generational change in wealth. The baby boomers are now in their 70s. Their kids are now in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. And how is that all impacting the evolution of the family office?
Well, I think that two things are running concurrently. So the first is that the estate tax exclusion amount, the lifetime exclusion, is the highest that it's ever been in history. You know, I remember when it was $250,000.
Right.
You know, now a married couple, you know, can give away $11 million plus without paying the tax. And so that knocked an awful lot of people out of the estate tax. So it's really just the top 1% paying this tax. So I always find it funny when people say all these tax, you know, cuts benefit the wealthy. Well, the wealthy are the only ones paying most of the taxes. And in fact, the top 1%, you know, pay almost 50% of all taxes, and the top 10% pay 75% of all taxes, and more than half the country doesn't pay anything. And under these new laws, if they're passed in a form similar to what's out there, the number's going to go up. So even more people will be paying absolutely nothing, and the burden on the top 1% is actually going to go up very significantly. You know, I've done my own calculation, and this is going to cost me a lot of money for no particularly good reason, in my opinion. So I think the concept is well considered, but doing this last-minute fourth quarter jam-it-through tax bill, I've seen this before. This is not the way it should be done. It should be done in a much more systematic and thoughtful manner, with a little less political influence, and floated and bounced around before they just jam something through for political purpose to give the standing senators and congressmen political cover for the midterm elections. You know, I've seen these December acts go through, and the act itself is, you know, 3/4 inch thick, and then 3 months later the technical corrections bill comes out and it's 2 inches thick. They made so many mistakes in it. So I'm not a fan of these last-minute bills, but directionally, a couple things are pretty clear, that in view of what's happening, not just in the U.S., but globally, families are going to be spending a lot more time on tax compliance, tax planning, because it's just required. So we're not the only country tweaking with their tax laws and trying to balance budgets, and it's getting very complex. And at the same time, there's no question that I think almost every year since World War II, the top 1% have paid more tax as a percentage. So despite what you hear in the media, the reality is the top 1%, it just keeps getting higher and higher and higher, and they're really shouldering an unreasonable amount of the burden. I'm not a fan of having half the population pay nothing. I'm very troubled by the lack of democratic input there. So this bill will be interesting. But people, by definition, are really going to have to make some moves. And I'm particularly concerned about the businesses, because what they aren't talking about a lot is that although large companies will have a significant drop in taxation, these small companies have a significant uptick. And so it really is not going to be helpful to small and medium-sized businesses. So there's going to be an awful lot of restructuring and a lot of consideration and analysis going on to figure out what to do with whatever this thing is that gets passed. And the global tax compliance is really on the rise, largely because of things like FATCA and Dodd-Frank and the Patriot Act. And so FATCA, in effect, allows governments to track the flow of their currency and their taxpayers around the world. So every government has a significant interest in getting on that platform, and there's a CRS, there's a computer system, where all the data is there and shared by all these countries. So it's becoming virtually impossible to hide or have secret accounts. I mean, that's been a very bad idea for 25 years, and now it's completely illegal. So because of that, that's also causing taxpayer flight. People are leaving countries because they get no tax benefit to be there. They're leaving countries because the tax is too high and they want to go someplace else. So this reduced corporate bracket, I think the global average is about 22%. The OECD average is 22.5%, and we're up at 36. So it's problematic. The highest tax rate on the planet is not going to enhance your business or encourage companies to bring money back here. So the concept behind getting a tax in the neighborhood of 20-22% is a very good one. I'd be happier if it were even lower. And the pundits are talking about the impact of how are we going to come back and combat this trillion-dollar or trillion-and-a-half-dollar deficit. Well, the reality is that deficit is such a tiny amount that if the GDP goes up by 1.5% in 1 year, it covers it. So it takes very little for this to happen. And when these kind of stimuli were put in place during the Reagan term, we went from a horrible 20% interest rate, massive unemployment, and just a horrible economy under Carter to the Reagan years where we had 7% GDP growth. I'd love to see some of those years again. Those are great times to be in business. So this is all going to be very interesting, but it's become increasingly a global model.
T, we got to take a quick break. Can you stick with me for another 10 minutes or so we can talk about what's going to go on in 2018?
Of course.
Oh, you're the man. I can't play the song again, but we'll play something snappy, I promise, okay?
Fair enough.
All right, here, this one's for you too, Tom.